Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is February 8th, 2014, and this is episode 46, Dice 2014.
More like Dicey 2014.
Ha ha! Right? Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org.
So, you know, like I said, this week we're going to be looking at the Dice Summit from 2014. But before we get to that discussion, as usual, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits. So in the interest of your time and our own, let's get this party started. Slackkick, if you'd like to kick us off.
I'm surprised you didn't want to take this one, because it's one of your faves. Treasure has revealed that amongst the changes they're making for the PC release of Ikaruga includes a double play mode, which lets you control two ships with a single controller. And there will also be, you know, HD support, and you will be able to pick it up on Steam for about $9.99.
Oh, man, that is super exciting to me. You know, I love Ikaruga. It's a great game. And I just love seeing them sort of add all of these sort of, you know, just interesting, cool new features that maybe none of the previous ports of this game, of which, you know, there are now quite a few, have ever had. So I'm really looking forward to tooling around with this once it hits.
Yeah, of course, they're, one of the big additions is a side-scrolling mode.
Yeah, that's very exciting to me. I'm really looking forward to playing with that.
That's what he said.
You know, we talked a little bit last week about Nintendo's current financial situation. Well, at the Investors and Analysts Q&A, Satoru Iwata-san shared that Nintendo intends to personally deliver a number of key Nintendo 3DS titles this year. And, of course, that's not in and of itself necessarily news so much. But a real valuable part of this strategy that they have now, and, you know, we're already seeing it this week, what with their having published Bravely Default Flying Fairy in the U.S., is that they plan on publishing quite a few third-party games this year. Apparently they're going to be handling localization of a lot of these games themselves from Japan, or helping developers and publishers to publish here in the U.S.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's very exciting. On a very similar related news, Capcom has discussed their plans to bring Monster Hunter Frontier G to regions outside of Japan. And of course, you know, while I'm very excited about that, because even though this is the jank Monster Hunter, I still want to play it because I love Monster Hunter. As of yet, Capcom has clarified that this doesn't mean that they are bringing these games to the West. You know, North America, Europe, and the like. Just that, you know, Yoshinori Ono, at an internal interview conducted at Capcom, had implied that, you know, part of the reason why Monster Hunter Frontier G is getting all of these ports to, you know, such consoles that we've talked about in the last few weeks, such as PlayStation 3, Wii U, you know, and Xbox 360, where, you know, for a long time it was available only on 360 and PC. Ono-san had indicated that this was because they had plans to grow this sub-franchise out in other territories.
Interesting.
Sidekick, if you'd like to take this next one.
Yeah, Strider is coming very, very soon. It is going to be out on February 18th for PS4 and PS3, and then a day later on Xbox One, Xbox 360, and Steam.
Oh man, that's great. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to this game.
It's going to be $15 and available on your choice of platform.
You know, and something that I'm really looking forward to, you may recall the Japanese PS3 release, download release, also comes with a download of Strider 1 and 2 PS1 classics.
Right.
I'm wondering if they're going to do that here in the U.S. for the PS3 version. I don't see anything here in the press release, so I guess I'm assuming not. But, you know, it'd still be very interesting to see if it does come out in some context.
Well, excellent. Those of you who have an Xbox One, a scheduled update for February 11th will bring A battery life indicator for the controller, which was, of course, available on
hashtag 360. Yeah, hashtag should have been there in the first place.
There'll also be an update that shows you how much room your games and apps are taking up.
That is another thing. Like, how do you release a freaking console that doesn't have that? Like, hey, there's no data management in this operating system.
And apparently they'll be splitting up the apps and games into separate lists, queues, and restrooms. Is restroom like a term for like a operating system?
I have never heard that term used. I'm sure. So if that's a term that is used, one of our listeners can maybe tweet at us and let us know over at gamebuoy.org.
At gamebuoy.org, with .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
D-O-T-O-R-G. Hashtag Gamebuoy Extra.
Hashtag Gamebuoy Extra.
In other news, Square Enix announced for Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII, there will be Lara Croft DLC, so that your Lightning can dress as Lara Croft.
It looks kind of ridiculous, though.
Yeah, it looks super ridiculous. Like, she's, like, super greasy and grimy and all beat up and bloody, and it's like, ew.
I mean, she kind of looks like a Charlie's Angel or something.
Okay, when you say it like that, it sounds very glamorous.
Yeah, but like a Charlie's Angel who just got, like, all dirty and stuff.
All right, moving on.
Drakengard 3 is going to be coming to North America on May 20th for the PS3. There is a collector's edition available that has lots of stuff in it, including a soundtrack, and it looks like a giant baby hat. Oh, we talked about the giant baby hat, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Collectible poster, the original Japanese box art, some costumes, DLC, and of course, Square Enix, as we had mentioned before, will be releasing Japanese voice DLC for the game.
Now, the really crazy thing here to me is that they're doing, like, a tiered pre-order set, like schedule. If you pre-order before March 4th, you get the Japanese voice DLC for free. If you pre-order between March 4th and April 9th, you'll get whatever the Wave 2 bonus is, which is currently unannounced. And if you pre-order between April 9th and presumably May 20th, you'll get the Wave 3 pre-order DLC. Obviously, if you get in during Wave 1, so that's before March 4th, you will get all of these bonuses.
That's interesting.
Unprecedented,
as far as I know.
It is unprecedented, and I think it's a bad thing. I do not think that it's cool to, like, lock you into a window. Like, you have to pre-order this now, or you're not going to get all the pre-order bonus DLC. Like, I have enough problems with pre-order bonus DLC. Like, that shit whack. I should be able to get my whole game just by buying my game.
Yeah.
So this really rubs me the wrong way. And, you know, I mean, I appreciate that, you know, pre-order DLC is, like, a thing now. But this leaves a bad taste in my mouth. This whole, like, tiered, you must pre-order by this time to get this bonus. Like, that's gross.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least Dragon Dragoon 3 is on its way over here, finally.
I cannot wait. In other news, the second and concluding episode of Bioshock Infinite's Burial at Sea DLC expansion pack will be hitting PS3, Xbox 360, and PC on March 25th.
Nice.
You know what else is nice? In Japan, Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call is going to be getting a limited edition 3DS XL, or LL as they call it in Japan.
It's really cute.
So this is going to hit in Japan in April when the game releases. It looks super cute, and it's going to be retailing for 23,000 yen, so, you know, like $230 US. There's a part of me that wants to pre-order or import this, because that XL is so effing cute. I love it.
Yeah, you can click a link over at gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
And you can see a picture for those of you who are unable to click a link at the moment. It's like a matte black with little silhouettes of Moogles and Chocobos in the background, and then the forefront in gold is just like the little cute character design of the main characters from each game as represented in their theater rhythm design. Like, standing like they're singing in a little choir. It's really cute.
Yeah, it is super cute. And this, you know, you just said something that reminded me of something I wanted to say. We used to say this on Game Buoy all the time, but we haven't in a little while. As ever and always, we post show notes on our website over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where you can find all of the links to every article that we talk about here on the show. So if you're looking to read along at home and sort of see pictures of what we're talking about, the best way to find that would be to look up the show notes over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. Play the home version.
Pretty much. In related Final Fantasy news, in Japan, Final Fantasy II, the NES version, is going to be released via Virtual Console. That's going to be hitting in Japan on February 12th for 500 yen.
Interesting.
And, yeah, I mainly just point this out, you know, I don't think we've gotten any of the Square Enix Final Fantasies, as if there are any other. I don't think
we've gotten seeing titles like Bravely Default, Flying Fairy.
Basically, right? I haven't seen any of the Final Fantasies on the Virtual Console in the US for the current platforms, 3DS and Wii U. But clearly Square Enix is willing to play ball, so, like, maybe Nintendo needs to get the fuck on that, because I would love to play the NES Final Fantasies on my 3DS.
I mean, the thing that was weird for me is that 2 is really broken.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's definitely true, but at the same time, it still has its fans. I mean, it's broken in the context that you have to play it a certain way, but it's not broken like you can't play it.
Yeah, you know, I guess, like, Castlevania 2 is broken in similar ways. And people still play it.
Castlevania 2 is broken way more than Final Fantasy 2. Like, okay, Final Fantasy 2 can be kind of counterintuitive because you need to get beat up a lot and almost lose battles basically constantly if you want to get stronger. But at least, like, that is explained in the game a little bit. Like, it's somewhat intuitive. Castlevania 2, especially the US release, is just like, this translation basically doesn't make sense. In other news, characters from Fist of the North Star have been announced for J-Star's Victory Versus. Both characters, Kenshiro and Rao, have been confirmed as playable characters in the game.
What?
J-Star's Victory Versus is slated for release in Japan on March 19th for PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita.
So kind of following up on that rumor tip from last episode, we got a surprise announcement
On Thursday
about a new franchise in the Sonic series called Sonic Boom.
Sonic Boom!
Sonic Boom! Sonic Boom! Which, of course, made everyone who was alive at the time remember Sonic Boom, the CD, Sonic CD theme song. This is going to be a multimedia franchise, including toys, a CG cartoon aired on Cartoon Network here in the U.S., and, of course, a game for Wii U and 3DS. These games are being developed not by Sega, but they are part of the exclusive deal with Nintendo.
Well, you know, the interesting thing here is that the Wii U game, and these games are exclusive for Wii U and 3DS. The Wii U version is being developed by the California-based Big Red Button Entertainment, which is notable because this is a company that was actually founded by people who left Naughty Dog.
Right, right. So a lot of people are hoping for some Crash Bandicoot-like
realness.
Like realness, I guess.
You know, the funny thing is, you look at these character designs, and they've come under a lot of pressure because the characters' looks have changed a lot from sort of classic Sonic. They all have sort of ganglier limbs and...
Well, except for Knuckles, who's like all barrel-chested now.
And they have, you know, very like triangle-shaped bodies that are real broad at the shoulders and sort of taper down. I have to tell you right now, like, you can just look at this sketch of Knuckles and, like, replace mentally his head with Crash Bandicoot's head, and it's like, that's what Crash Bandicoot looked like in the later years.
Really, yeah.
So, I don't know. A lot of people really dislike it. Sonic has a hipster scarf on and, like, all of these weird bandages on his legs and arms. Bandages, bandages. But I think it looks pretty cool. I watched the preview advertisement for the TV series. I thought it looked appropriate. Like, it looked better than, like, chili dogs!
Ah!
So, I don't know. I think I'm excited for this.
I mean, based on the preview for the show, it's very clearly targeted at children. The show.
Yeah, but I mean, what isn't in terms of video games? Like, I can't think of any game TV series that wasn't directed at children.
True.
But if you know one, feel free to tweet us at us, hashtag GameBuoyExtra.
Hashtag GameBuoyExtra.
Slaggy McWaggy, why don't you take this next one?
Skullgirls Encore is going to be coming to PlayStation Network on Tuesday, so probably by the time you are listening to this episode. You might recall that Konami, who originally published, removed the game from Xbox Live and PSN. If you have bought the original Skullgirls, you will get Encore for free. It will be a completely new game. So that means achievements, leaderboards, and game saves will be reset.
Yeah, but, you know, that's really cool. And this does come with a new character. So, you know, it's cool that the game is coming back. It's cool that people who previously bought it are getting it free. And it's cool that it comes with new content, like a new character. Like, this, to me, it's always really tricky when you see these publisher deals sour, and a publisher pulls out of support for a game from a smaller developer like that. But I really have to say that the Skullgirls folks really turned it around, and I think made this situation work for them.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, although a release date for the 360 version hasn't been announced, that will be coming in the form of a patch, which means everything will transfer, so...
Yeah, that is very interesting, but I think it probably just has to do with the way that the different infrastructures work.
True.
And notably, the Steam version is still available on Steam, because it did not... Konami did not publish it, so the rights agreement or whatever didn't... You know, it wasn't impacted, so it's still available as it ever was.
Nice. Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, is going to have free downloadable content, primarily in the form of 12 additional mini-episodes. The other DLC is going to be art galleries. This will be available in Europe on February 28th with an yet-to-be-announced later-this-year release date for North America.
Exciting! I cannot wait to play that. In other news, Pillars of Eternity has been delayed again.
Oops, poops.
And, you know, I mean, I say again, but I really just mean that we sort of thought that we'd have more information on this game than we currently have. This was, of course, Project Eternity, the Kickstarter from Obsidian from last year that you may recall. I guess the problem that Project Lead Josh Sawyer has intimated to Eurogamer was that basically they got four times as much money as they were asking for, and so through the backer stretch goals and what have you, the game grew, the game's scope and design grew several times. So with, you know, initially they'd hoped to have this game finished by April, but since, you know, the extra money didn't really change, like, the size of their team or anything, they just now have more material to work on for longer. Things are going slower than planned.
It's just kind of funny to me. Oh, we got too much money, so we need to make the game bigger. Which, on one hand, I mean, I appreciate that they had lofty stretch goals, but on the other hand, you know, when you're planning this out, especially since it's not, like, just some no-name, it's Obsidian, so, you know, like,
yeah.
they know how to do stuff.
Y'all should know how to budget and schedule your game, yeah.
So, like, why not, when you're anticipating the design scope, you know...
Or let people know ahead of time, these stretch goals, you know, may impact our schedule. Or even better, do the stretch goals as like effing DLC or something after release.
True.
Finish your core game and then add to it.
True.
I think, anyway.
In an interesting and potentially controversial news bit, Titanfall's 360 release has been delayed a few weeks. It's going to be released on March 25th in North America and March 28th in Europe, which, of course, is about 2 weeks behind the Xbox One and PC release on March 11th. So those of you who were planning on getting Titanfall for 360, you're going to have to wait a little bit. They're just making finishing touches for the current-gen version. So in order to do that, they are going to delay the 360 version.
And, you know, I have to say, I appreciate that Titanfall is probably not the kind of game you expect to hear about on Game Buoy. But something about, and you know, I've talked about this a little bit, but something about the scope and goals of this game's design really click for me. So up until its release, we're probably going to be talking about it. And I'm going to buy it day one, and if it's super good, I'm going to keep talking about it. And if it's awful, we will forget about it, and it will fade into obscurity.
Yeah, I plan on getting it probably launch day for Xbox One, so I'm looking forward to it. And I was rereading this information from Patrick Soderlund from EA, and both versions are in the processes of being polished up. So I was a little confused with his use of current gen, which I guess was meant to refer to 360, but that's last gen.
Yeah, people don't refer to that as current gen anymore. We're in a new gen, dog. In any event, did you hear about this week's big gaming controversy?
Yeah, the Ground Zeroes shitstorm.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because we didn't talk about that last week. So, a lot of playthroughs of Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes have now been done by various gaming magazines and websites and what have you. And the somewhat uncomfortable fact came out that Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, a game that has a floating price point between $20 and $40 based on how you choose to purchase it, basically is about an hour and a half long for the main scenario. Now, of course, there are additional play modes, and being a Metal Gear Solid game, there is going to be a lot of extra content within that main scenario. A lot of, you know, there are going to be side quests, there's going to be a ton of, like, environmental, like, Easter eggs, and, like, different ways that you can approach different, like, problematic situations. You know, sort of what you tend to expect from a Metal Gear Solid game.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, since this is the prologue to Metal Gear Solid 5, a lot of people are having a problem with this game apparently only having about as much content as the demo for Metal Gear Solid 2 had. That was, of course, the tanker level for those of you that played it. And while, again, in typical Metal Gear Solid Kojima fashion, the tanker on that demo is a different experience from playing the tanker in the actual game, it still has raised a lot of interesting discussions, sort of about what people expect to get for their money.
Yeah, which is something we've been talking about on Game Buoy for a while. So,
and, you know, I want to say, and I'm going to just real quick say what Kojima's response is, because that's what this news article is, and then I'm going to comment on it myself, and then I expect you to comment on it as well, Slag.
Yes.
But, basically, Hideo Kojima-san basically said that, you know, this is not a linear game. Ground Zeroes offers freedom of approach and playstyle, which we hope players will enjoy over and over without becoming bored. I believe people will be satisfied with the quote-unquote playtime of Ground Zeroes and not stress the quote-unquote clear time, which is standard for linear games. He's basically saying, I feel like there's enough here to do that this is justified, that it's a full, fun experience, and that you should not stress just how fast it can be complete, quote-unquote, completed.
Right.
And I have to say, for my part, I'm on Kojima's side on this. I will probably not spend $40 to buy a retail copy of this game for PS4 right away.
I thought you were going to go with Xbone for the,
Well, actually, I was kind of planning on buying it for both, but hearing that it's only 2 hours, for me, like, that is a little bit of a problem, but I don't have a problem with them selling it. To me, the most important part of this equation is that Konami and Koji Pro, you know, they're really getting out there in front of this and acknowledging, like, yeah, okay, if you just play the scenario super linearly, straight, like, don't do extra stuff, don't have fun, you just go for the golden speed run. Yeah, you can get through it in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I appreciate that Konami is acknowledging that, and I agree with them that I think a game experience can and should be more than just straightforward start to finish.
Right. I've seen a lot of comparisons made to the Gran Turismo Prologue releases.
Yeah, well, I feel, you know, and that's a comparison I myself was making over on Twitter while talking to some folks from other podcasts. Cause, you know, a lot of people were really upset about this and really offended about this. And to me, it's like, well, it's not like they're trying to sell it as a full game. They're not saying this is a full game's content. They're saying this is the prologue to Metal Gear Solid 5. And if, you know, it's, if you buy the last gen download version, it's only $20. I think that it sounds like there's more content here than you get in most $20 download games.
True.
So I really think that it really depends on how you look at it. A lot of people are looking at, like, the most expensive configuration, which is buying the current gen, retail version, so Xbox One or PS4. But again, even on those platforms, the download version is $10 cheaper, and if you go last gen, you're getting it for $20, and it sounds to me like, you know, it sounds like a pretty full experience for $20, comparable, like you said, to Gran Turismo 5 Prologue.
Mm-hmm. So, we'll have to see how this pans out and if it affects sales. I don't think it will.
I don't, you know, I kind of do, to the extent that I think initially a lot of people aren't going to bite. I think as soon as you start seeing the retailers selling these for a little cheaper, I think people are going to start snapping them up. Or if the game hits, you know, sort of the main retail channels and gets really good word of mouth, maybe it's an amazing experience, people are going to start talking about it, and then no one's going to give a fuck about the price, like if it's a great experience.
Yeah. In other Metal Gear Solid 5 news, the Phantom Pain could be launching as late as December 2015, or as early as October of this year. It's just dependent on...
big ass window.
Dependent on how progression of development occurs.
I'm going to tell you, this is a Metal Gear game, this is Koji Pro, expect closer to December 2015.
And you know, this Joystick article points out that, like, at least for this quarter, the only worldwide releases from Konami are going to be Lords of Shadow 2 and Ground Zeroes. The rest of their portfolio is kind of Japan exclusive, so that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's not news. We've talked about that even here on this show, that they're really shrinking in terms of their output, especially worldwide.
Yeah.
Also, here comes news that Child of Light, the Ubisoft game that is heavily inspired by Japanese role-playing games, will be launching on Xbox 360, Xbox One, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Wii U, and PC via Steam on April 30th.
Yeah, I can't wait for this. It's got a similar system to the Active Time Battle system from Final Fantasy, and you play as a scrappy princess.
Nothing about the beautiful watercolor-styled artwork.
I assume she's scrappy. She has a magical blue orb companion.
Hey, she got them blue balls.
Really? Did you have to take it there?
And last, but certainly not least, we have news that Mother Brain will be an assist trophy in Super Smash Bros. Yeah, this looks awesome. There is a picture of it on the Silicon Era post that we're going to link over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And I am, as ever and always, crazy excited to play Super Smash Bros.
Yeah, can we just talk about how in Captain N, Mother Brain was basically a drag queen? She's like, hey everybody, wanna ride on my meat mohawk?
Ah! Alright, with that, let's get over to...
news. 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 Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news.
Alright, so A World of Keflings is going to be available for Wii U by the end of March, according to developer NinjaBee.
And, you know, this is really interesting because the Keflings games were sort of a big exclusive for the 360 platform when Avatars first launched.
Yeah.
The first Keflings game in particular was sort of like one of the big, like, oh, hey, you can use your avatar in this game. And now, you know, sort of in a very life inspires art, circle of a snake eating itself, we now have World of Keflings with giant Miis.
I mean, it seems appropriate. I kind of feel like, I don't know, that avatars kind of are less prominent than they were for that stretch of time.
Yeah,
I mean, I assume they're still used for stuff like Kinect Sports Rivals and stuff, right?
You know, they are, except, as far as I know, they actually don't exist on the Xbox One.
I have my avatar on.
Do you? Like, I don't think I've ever seen an avatar on Xbox One.
Yeah, you go into your profile, and you can still pose them and stuff. And
no shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
There. Like, they're still there.
Because it doesn't use that interface where it's like your friends just hanging out as their avatars.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting that they shied away from that. But avatars are still there.
Like, you have to go to a different menu for it and stuff. Like, that's hardly even a thing. Again, I've used my Xbox One for months now, and I have not seen avatars.
Anyway.
This is one I'm really excited about. Arcade Management Sim ArcadeCraft is finally coming to the PC.
Yay! I was going to take that story. And you
well, I don't
me.
Care, because I've been looking forward to this game coming to PC for effing ever. I'm a little bit concerned, because apparently it's not yet been approved for Greenlight, which, you know, has been a thorn in their side for a while, as well as the sides of many independent developers. But there is a Steam Greenlight page up to go vote for this for release, so I really hope that if you like sim games and the idea of doing, like, a arcade sim sounds appealing to you, that you'll go check this game out and vote for it on Greenlight. I was actually, funny enough, just a few days before this news broke, I was at Firebase's website. I almost called it Firebase's.com. I was at Firebase's website looking at information on the PC port of ArcadeCraft, because, you know, I'm kind of over the Xbox 360 indie games. Like, I don't have my Xbox hooked up in my bedroom anymore. It's, like, in the other room just so I can play HBO Go so I can watch Girls all night. And so I've been waiting for this PC port to come out, and I noticed that their website hadn't been updated with regard to the PC version in a long time. So I was really concerned, but it looks like it's finally almost done. And, you know, it's already up on the Humble Indie Bundle store, I guess it's just the Humble store, for pre-order. So,
and I assume that
any day now, I guess.
I assume that once it gets on Steam, you know, fingers crossed, that Humble store would just be like, oh, we noticed you purchased ArcadeCraft. You can now redeem this on Steam.
Yeah, that typically does happen with games you buy on the Humble store, because I've bought games there and gotten Steam keys, so I don't see why that wouldn't happen for this.
Retro City Rampage DX, which is the 3DS port of Retro City Rampage,
came out on Thursday.
Yeah, for the North American eShop. It'll be over in Europe on February 20th. It is available for $10, and it has some major tweaks to pretty much every aspect of the game.
And apparently, according to Joystick, I haven't played this game yet myself, but according to Joystick, the game has been modified toward providing a better overall experience. So, to me, that's a good thing.
This is some great news for anyone who might have picked up Assassin's Creed 4 on Xbox One, like myself, and also owns a PS4 or PS3. You will be able to download the Freedom Cry DLC as a standalone game, kind of similar to Blood Dragon for Far Cry 3.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of standalone games, yeah.
It'll be available on February 18th for the PlayStations and PC a week later.
Excellent. That's great. I mean, I don't know that I really need it as a separate download, but
I picked up Assassin's Creed 4 for Xbox One, so this will be great because that means I won't miss the content and have to go out and buy the game again.
Now, here we have a really controversial piece of news. The man known as Japan's Beethoven, Mamoru Samuragoshi, he's well known for having composed scores for games like Resident Evil, Onimusha, as well as having done quite a few arrangements that have sort of become like national, like, treasures almost in Japan. You know, even as he was going deaf, he was still composing some really touching pieces, such as Symphony No. 1 in Hiroshima, which was a tribute to those killed in the atomic bombing. The reason, in any event, the reason why we go over all of this is that it has turned out that Samuro Gotch-san has sort of come out of the closet as a fraud. That is to say that most of his work from the later part of his career was actually written by a ghostwriter and simply credited to him.
Yikes.
And that does, in fact, include most of his iconic works. Apparently, he had lost his hearing completely before having composed the, quote-unquote, composed the Onimusha score. We haven't yet heard exactly which pieces were written by him and which were written by the ghostwriter, but they started to sort of go in this direction around the time that he was asked to start composing music for movies in the mid-90s. So,
you know, the thing that was really, like, I try not to point out troll comments, but something that I was really offended by was that people joking in the comments about the quality of music for Resident Evil Director's Cut, the DualShock edition that he worked on, basically implying that because they weren't a fan of the music in that game and that it was terrible, that, oh, he must have completely composed it himself and been totally deaf at that time. Which I think is, like, handicap shaming.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely...
Or disability shaming.
That's disgusting to me. Like, you can take your privilege and have fun with the fact that you can hear well, but, like, cool that you're making fun of people who can't.
Yeah.
Like, that is effing rude and you're awful.
So, here's a crazy story that's kind of gone out of control over the past week. I mean, it's really been building up over months, but
well, let's give the base here, because we've never talked about this game here on Game Buoy, as far as I'm aware. Flappy Bird, somehow, it's sort of a really basic game, sort of the kind of game that most game students would make in a night. It's very basic. You're a little bird. You have to go through some holes and some pipes on a very standard 2D plane. It's all very basic. It's super basic. It's a very basic game. But somehow this became the number one game, both in the iOS store and in the Android store, to the point where the Flappy Bird creator was making $50,000 a week on ads in-game for this free game with no microtransactions. So, you know, he's made hundreds of thousands of dollars off of Flappy Bird, this weird game he made. He said, after work for three nights in a row. Like, he just got home from work, tooled around on this game a little bit for three nights, and it ended up making several hundred thousand dollars. Now that you have that background, Slagkick, if you'd like to talk about the strange twist it took this weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been out since May of last year, and, you know, for a while was the most popular app on iTunes, but, like, really over the past week or so, it's just been, like, it's just exploded. You know, like, BuzzFeed ran an article on it and kind of pointing out that the game is really, like, ridiculously difficult and kind of basic. And so we have word from the creator that he said via his Twitter, "I am sorry, Flappy Bird users. 22 hours from now, I will take Flappy Bird down. I cannot take this anymore. It is not anything related to legal issues. I just cannot keep it anymore." So he's just, and that was tweeted on Saturday. So, I mean, at this point, Flappy Bird is gone with the wind.
And in fact, I can confirm this has been much discussed today. Flappy Bird is gone. Like, if you have it on your device already, you're good. But if you don't, like, goodbye, Flappy Bird.
And it's just it's kind of, like, I can't really tell if it's that he's insulted that people are, you know, talking about how difficult and basic it is, or if he's just so overwhelmed with the response to it that he is, you know, kind of just secluding himself. The thing is that he did say he's going to continue making games. This was not his first mobile game. Very interesting kind of twist in this story.
Yeah, and, you know, he has discussed sort of previously how all of this attention he was starting to find overwhelming. So it really sounds like he just didn't expect this game to blow up, and he does not have, I guess, the time or inclination to deal with this kind of attention.
You know, this kind of reminds me of the Fez 2 situation with Phil Fish. I mean, in a similar way, just where, like, content is being taken away or canceled because of media response to things.
Interesting. Interesting.
Do you not agree?
I think there are some similarities. I mean, I think it's a little bit different because Phil Fish was being verbally attacked, and I don't know that anyone was verbally attacking Dong Nguyen as much as just, you know, there was more attention than he wanted. Like, Phil Fish wanted attention, he just didn't want that attention. But, I mean, I suppose it's somewhat similar in the context that a popular game would not be seeing a sequel or for additional support because of sort of creator response to unexpected attention.
Yeah. In happier news, Capcom, during a financial results report, shared that Ace Attorney Dual Destinies, Resident Evil Revelations, and Dead Rising 3 have all achieved projected sales, that Monster Hunter 4 has surpassed their estimates by a large margin, Monster Hunter Frontier G is performing steadily, but perhaps the biggest piece of news for me is that DuckTales Remastered performed better than expected. So that's a pretty hopeful sign that we will see further way forward collaborations of these Nintendo Entertainment System Disney gems.
Now, it is worth mentioning, although they did not say so in the Silicon Era article summarizing these results, but in the report about the results themselves, Ace Attorney, Dual Destinies, and Dead Rising 3 were both singled out as also performing over expectations. So, it's not just that those two had achieved their projected sales as noted here on Silicon Era, but they actually had overperformed a little bit. Simply
That's
not great. To the degree that Monster Hunter 4 has, which is one of
Monster Hunter
games.
Is like a tour de force.
Well, but it has it exceeded expectations. It's already broken the 4 million copies sold mark in Japan alone.
That doesn't surprise me, honestly. Monster Hunter's a big deal.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, hell, I'm a Monster Hunter fan for sure. But it's interesting to me that the one time Capcom set modest sales expectations was on the one game where you can really justify expecting the world.
Yeah.
Like, how can you expect Lost Planet 3 to be a huge multi-million selling game and then not expect the same of Monster Hunter 4?
Right.
Speaking of Lost Planet 3, Capcom noted that sales of Lost Planet 3 were below expectations, in part due to, quote-unquote, intensifying competition in the European and North American markets.
What a gentle way to state it.
And I'm just going to say no. Lost Planet 3 sold below expectations because nobody fucking wanted it.
So, you can't sit with us.
Yeah, right. Moving forward, if you'd like to take this next one.
Yeah, there had been a shortage of copies of Rune Factory 4, but XSEED assures us that Rune Factory 4 is selling well beyond their expectations to the point where they're working as quickly as possible to restock physical copies. And so that's great news because in Europe, the release was canceled by Marvelous AQL and said that securing a European release was not possible to do. So if you're QQing about, oh, I want Rune Factory 4 and you can't find a copy, just be glad that we have it.
Yep, we have it and it's coming. They're doing reprints. So that's superb.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Bless
you, XSEED. I feel really bad for European fans. You know, I see a lot of people here on the comments on this article on Joystick decrying how the game isn't coming to Europe. But it sounds to me like Marvel has tried, and for whatever reasons, they just couldn't get the rights for it. So that really sucks, and I hope that situation changes. You know, it looks like a pretty good game. And other news, and this is something that I am somewhat hesitant to talk about because this isn't really my kind of game, but I find this fascinating. You're probably familiar with DayZ and WarZ and, you know, that entire sort of subgenre of game where it's like, oh, humans versus zombies, but actually the worst enemies are other humans who in this sort of post-apocalyptic open-world experience are way more likely to kill you than zombies are. Rust is a game that is currently in early access on Steam that has been sort of making waves for taking this point and sort of going as far as you possibly can with it. Ostensibly, Rust is a zombie open-world survival game where you build huts and you build houses out of material that you find, sort of like, I don't know, Minecraft meets Dawn of the Dead. But it really has turned out to be a little bit more like Mad Max. There are roving street gangs in the world. Players will, like, have guns and basically just psychologically torment other players upon logging into the game, and it's become
Did you hear about the Petus Brothers game?
I did. They hold you at gunpoint and make you get naked, or they kill you. Like, this is like a really crazy, bizarre, emergent gameplay type, and the creators of Rust are basically acknowledging that the people aren't playing this for the zombies, and they have removed all zombies from the game. They're going to be temporarily replaced with red bears and wolves, and over time they will be replaced with some other kind of NPC enemy. But the developers of Rust clearly recognize that the reason people are playing is doing weird shit to each other, and so they're now designing the game around that. It's not really a zombie survival anymore.
Yeah. So if you're into that idea, or joining the penis train, you might want to check out Rust. Seriously, that's what it's called that the Petus Brothers do. They form a penis train.
Hey-o!
Only on the internet.
Let's see, we have news that Eternoblade, the side-scrolling, combo-driven action-adventure game from Core Cell Technology, will be releasing on the 3DS eShop on February 18th.
Ooh!
I'm only really reporting on this here because I've never heard of this game. But apparently there's a demo currently available for it on the eShop, and I saw this trailer for it this morning while I was finishing up the show roll, and like, man, this game looks awesome!
Yeah, it really does.
So, it's now on my radar. I'm gonna go check out this demo as soon as we're done recording, and I just wanted to make all of you guys out there on Internet Radio Land aware that this is a thing, because if it's half as cool as this trailer looks, I think it's gonna be pretty cool.
So this next article is something that's, like, kind of also controversial. We've had a couple things this week that are still so controversial. This, of course, is that Amazon has acquired Double Helix. This is not going to obviously affect the release of Strider.
Yeah, I mean, a game that's coming out in a week and a half, like, that's done.
But the 75 employees of Double Helix are now employees of Amazon. They're going to stay in their Orange County headquarters, and Amazon is intending to use the studio to build innovative games for customers. A lot of us are kind of hoping that we don't have to worry about this affecting the DLC plan for Killer Instinct.
Well, apparently the Season 1 DLC content is finished, so that will be releasing as usual. And Microsoft, who owns Killer Instinct franchise, has told Polygon, in fact, that they will continue to further develop Killer Instinct on Xbox One. So certainly the implication is that the Season 2 content is still coming. However, it's going to be with, quote-unquote, a new development partner. So we don't know who that is. We do know that Microsoft's team that was working with Double Helix on Killer Instinct, we do know that those guys are still there. I have to assume that includes, you know, Ken Lobb and some of those other guys from the old days of Rare. But basically, this is really scary. I was talking with Delvin over from Video Game Realness about this. This brings up sort of scary shades of what we saw happen with PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
Yeah.
When Superbot Entertainment got sort of defuncted. Like, I don't know what the verb of that would be. But when they got, you know, rejected from Sony, and they had all of these cool DLC plans they were working on, you know, Dart from Legend of Dragoon, Abe from Abe's Odyssey are sort of the two easiest ones. And they got replaced on that project by Sony for Sony Santa Monica, who just ended up doing some God of War DLC and then shutting the game down, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm worried about that happening here again. And, you know, it's not strictly apples to apples, because we do still have, you know, Microsoft's team, Killer Instinct team, working on the game and guiding it. So it could still turn out okay. I sort of have to admit I have a foot in my mouth, because I had said previously that there was no way Double Helix could make a good Killer Instinct game. They most certainly did. So now I'm a little bit hesitant to say that no one else could pick this up, because clearly Double Helix proved that it's possible, even with no fighting game experience, to make a pretty solid fighting game if you have the right guiding, guiding hands. So, fingers crossed. I am scared and worried because I like Killer Instinct so tremendously. But, at the same time, benefit of the doubt, I'm just going to try to remain optimistic.
Yeah, and you know, this raises a lot of questions about what exactly Amazon intends to do. I mean, of course, their statement is that they want to build innovative games for customers. Some people said, oh, this is a sure sign that the Amazon console is on its way, which...
I'm one of those people.
Which is, you know, definitely a possibility. There's a possibility that they'll just use Double Helix for mobile social games available on the Amazon Marketplace. There's a possibility that you'll need Amazon Prime in order to play online for Double Helix-developed games.
You know, I have to say, trolling. We haven't talked about this rumor here on Game Buoy, because we typically only talk about rumors that seem very, very likely. And I did not think that the rumors of an Amazon console seemed likely. The rumor has gone for the last year or so that Amazon is basically developing an Ouya of its own. An Android-based micro-console that will, at least, is designed to compete against the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 generation consoles. So on the level of like a Wii U, basically. Like a micro-console Wii U competitor in terms of power. And I thought that this sounded like the stupidest, most ridiculous, like, okay, you're going to sell a $200 box for games and streaming Amazon Prime streaming, I guess? And I just thought this seemed really dumb. I didn't see any reason why Amazon would get into this marketplace. But, like, now with this acquisition of Double Helix, like, you just bought an up-and-coming studio. Like, if you were to ask me what the number one studio to buy would be right now in terms of, like, not worth a lot of money because all their old games were awful, but has now put together some really incredible games, so they're, like, a rising star, Double Helix would have been my pick. Like, yeah. They are a rising star. Killer Instinct was phenomenal. By all accounts, people who have played Strider say it's very impressive. And so to me, if you're looking to, like, build a launch game for your new console, acquiring a studio like that is what you'd do. You know, Amazon does own other studios for mobile development. They do have some free-to-play/mobile stuff for what is their device? Is their device the Nook, or is theirs the Kindle? Amazon is Kindle, right?
Kindle.
Yeah, so they have teams that do that kind of stuff on Kindle already. So, I mean, to me, there's only one reason you'd buy a console developer, and that's because you want to dip your fingers in the console pie.
I mean, or maybe they just want to get into game publishing and, you know, they'll still continue to develop for other consoles.
And, you know, that could be the case, except I don't see why that would end Double Helix's contract with Microsoft if that were the case.
Yeah.
Like, they would still be... again, these are the disparate pieces that when you put together, it tells a sort of weird story, because if Microsoft was just buying them to publish games because they want to get into game publishing, then, you know, presumably, Microsoft would just, okay, well, you're now the publisher for their games, but we're still going to use them and you'll get money for their work on Killer Instinct. Like, that sort of thing has happened. You can look at when EA bought BioWare, and, you know, they still made Mass Effect 2 for Xbox. They just also made it for PS3 after that point.
Yeah.
So, to me, the fact that Double Helix is no longer working on Killer Instinct is a very interesting part of this puzzle that, to me, does imply that Amazon has a plan that doesn't involve publishing games on other consoles.
Right. Interesting. Well, in a fun news bit, 1001 Spikes is going to feature characters inspired by classic video game heroes. There is Mr. Video Game, who is a plumber who hurls fireballs, a knight who gets disrobed during his death.
Which obviously is a reference to Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts.
Yes. A ninja-like character who obviously is a nod to Ryu Hayabusa. And a whip-wielding hero.
Apparently it's also going to have a cameo by Commander Video from the Bit Trip series. And you know, I specifically wanted to talk about this game because this is a remake of Aban Hawkins and the 1000 Spikes, which was a Xbox Live indie game that I love. Like, that's probably what my favorite Xbox 360 game is, Aban Hawkins and the 1000 Spikes. So 1001 Spikes is going to be launching on the 3DS and Wii U in quarter one of 2014, so in the next month or so, with releases also planned for PS4, Vita, PC, Mac, and Linux.
Nice.
And I'm just, again, I'm really excited for this game. I cannot wait. In other news, here in North America, Dynasty Warriors 8 Extreme Legends Complete Edition will be releasing on the PlayStation Vita and PlayStation 4 on March 25th.
Cool. It'll be interesting to see how many enemies they can get on the screen to push the PS4's limits.
Yeah, I'm actually really interested.
That is a an intentional design point of Musou games.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the whole goal of Musou games is to do as much shit as possible on screen at a time. Like, that's, like, what they do.
To basically slow down your frame rate.
basically. I mean, not necessarily literally exactly like, oh, let's slow down the frame rate, but more like, let's do everything we possibly can. And if the frame rate skips, oh well.
Yeah, I noted in this article that saves will transfer across PS3, PS4, and Vita, so that's cool.
Oh, in case you don't have the Extreme release or whatever?
I guess so.
Well, excellent. Excellent. Okay, next up, we have some news, you know, and I'm bringing this up sort of in a masturbatory sense. Like,
whoa.
I don't necessarily care about this news, I just want to point it out. Call of Duty now has 3 studios working, so that Activision can continue publishing this, annually. We're now going to see Sledgehammer Games, making annual.
Oh, is that
Call
Peter Gabriel's, development company?
Sledgehammer! No, but, you know, alongside Infinity Ward and Treyarch, who were respectively responsible for Call of Duty Ghosts and Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Those games are already on an annual schedule on currently a 2-year dev cycle. They're now moving to a 3-year dev cycle per game, and Sledgehammer will be the third studio making them.
Yeah, and you know, you hear like Infinity Ward, Infinity Ward, Infinity Ward, but Sledgehammer did Modern Warfare 3, which was pretty well received. I mean, definitely more so, I think, than like Black Ops 2 and such.
Yeah, no, certainly. So, you know, again, this is interesting in terms of, and let's be fair here, my disdain for AAA gaming is a long-noted fact. And I don't necessarily hate AAA games. You look at my game of the year last year, like, it was Super Mario 3D World, that's certainly AAA. My problem is sort of this AAA development process that a lot of Western studios take, like, oh man, these 3 studios now are just pumping out back-to-back Call of Duties for as far as the eye can see. And, like, while each studio is making a game, like, they're watching the other studios also making same game. Like, I just don't see how that's long-term sustainable. I don't think it's a great thing, and it really makes me worry about the health of the industry when some of the biggest franchises in the world are sort of being pumped out on an assembly line like this.
Yeah.
I'll leave you this note. It's not strictly gaming. We don't normally talk about some of these stuff, but I found it exciting, and I think you will too, so.
Yeah, you know, kind of continuing the concept of the Xbox platform being a media, all-inclusive experience. Xbox One and Xbox 360 owners are going to be able to stream live performances from this year's Bonnaroo Music and Art Festival in Tennessee. The announcement is going to be, the artist announcement is going to be made exclusively on Xbox consoles and the Bonnaroo website in an event hosted by Taryn Killam from, Saturday Night Live on February
19th.
Right. And that's really cool. Like, you know, Bonnaroo usually has a pretty legit lineup. And, like, it's in the summer, right? Like.
Yeah, it's in June, on June 12th through 15th this year.
Oh, that's great. So, we might have to have a Bonnaroo party with our Xbox One.
Dude, right?
So that's kind of cool. Like, you know, Microsoft's really been trying to have exclusive non-gaming content. They had the, Chosen premiere a week before it came out on television through the FX Now app. So, that's cool that, you know, they're not just, blowing hot air. They're really trying to, you know, actively seek out content partners, so.
Now, this is something I'm really excited about. There's a new game on Kickstarter right now called Nevermind. And this is a game, that they're going to be bringing out to PC, using, you know, Oculus VR tech, as well as, like, using, Xbox One, so that they can tap into, like, the Kinect. And basically what this game does is it uses biofeedback so that as, like, your heart rate gets higher and starts pumping more, like, the game gets scarier. So this is a horror game, and, you know, this is the kind of concept that I have been trying to sell since Nintendo announced the biosensor.
Oh, the Vitality.
Vitality sensor, I'm sorry. Yeah. And you know, that device received a lot of scorn in games media and the games community, but to me, if you just stop and think for a second of what could be done with that sort of tech in a game like, let's say, Resident Hill.
Let's say it's only a matter of time before that happens.
Silent Hill Shattered Memories, which already did some, like, environmental tracking to see it, like, what you as a player were looking at first and, like, how you ran from fights and stuff. And, you know, the scenario changed around you based on this data. Imagine a game like that also taking into account your actual, like, oh, your heart rate is pumping hella hard, you're scared, this is a great time to throw Pyramid Head at you. Get ready to run, bitch! Like, to me, this sort of game design, this sort of reacts to you and your actual state, this to me is sort of a big deal. It's very exciting, and I think it's sort of one of the next frontiers of gaming.
You know,
it's sort of a game that is more reactive to you as a player.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting, and, some interesting discussion going on over on Kotaku saying that, you know, this might actually be helpful for people who have suffered from things like post-traumatic stress disorder and, you know, anxiety sufferers, that if you're able to play this and control yourself and master your emotions, that it could be, like, possibly, you know, I mean, there's no medical, like.
Yeah, but to teach you sort of biofeedback, which is a thing.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's actually quite a fascinating angle on this. And I, again, you know, I'm into this. I'm into this as an idea. I'm very excited about it. There's a video that you can watch over on Kotaku that is from the Kickstarter. And if you're into it, back it. I'm going to. I'm really excited about this as a concept. I have been talking about this as a concept for a long time, and I'm happy to see someone finally taking a swing at it.
Yeah, really interesting.
And last, but certainly not least, Eve Valkyrie, which was previously a demo, and then they were going to make, like, a game of it. You know, this was the Eve game that is made for the Oculus Rift. And initially, they just made a demo. They were like, okay, well, it's set in the Eve universe, but it's not, like, a real game. It's just a demo to test, like, having truth, like, virtual reality, like, oh, you're in your cockpit, you can look around your cockpit and pilot that way. Then they're like, okay, we're going to make a full game, but the Oculus mode will just be a mode. And otherwise it will be just like a standard space shooter. Well, now Eve Valkyrie is going to be the first title that's being published by Oculus Rift themselves, making it an exclusive to Oculus Rift as a platform. I mean, obviously it will still be a PC game, but you will not be able to play it without Oculus Rift.
I'm okay with that if it means that it's really going to encourage developers to come up with unique experiences. I mean, and really, you know, make Oculus Rift a platform in itself, like you said.
Yeah. I'm very excited for the Oculus Rift. I know that some of our super fans have gotten a hold of these units.
Yes.
I haven't yet been able to convince myself to throw down the $300 for a dev kit model. But I have to tell you, you know, I just did my taxes last week. There's a part of me that wants to buy an Oculus Rift now.
Hey, I mean, it sounds like it's very promising, so...
Yeah, I have been very eager and very excited for this technology, and it sounds like it's finally on its way, so it's neat.
Cool, cool, cool.
All right, well, with that having been said, I think it's time to have a little discussion, Slaggy.
All right, let's roll the dice, 2014.
Oh, well done. You know, you're doing a Final Fantasy 11 or 10 line. But I actually thought that was a little bit clever. So, like, the one time I'm giving you credit, you were, like, blowing it off. So, Slaggy, why don't you tell me a little bit about dice?
Dice? Oh, they must be thousands of years old at this point. They are meant for
I'm about to
gaming. They are thrown or tossed.
I'm going to throw a whole can of soda at you. Hard. Like, not like tossing it to you. I would never do that. Please don't look at me so scared.
So, those of you who had not checked out our last year's dice episode and need a little bringing up to speed, DICE is an acronym for Design, Innovate, Communicate, Entertain, the DICE Summit. It is something that is put on by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, which is a non-profit organization founded in 1996, and it is dedicated to the advancement and recognition of the interactive arts. And, you know, these DICE summits are known for having, you know, big wigs, you know, kind of just trying to further the discussion of game design in a different way than something like GDC is. It's kind of more like, I would say more like TED Talks for games.
Yeah, that I think is actually like, that's probably the best way to sell it to someone who doesn't know what DICE is already.
Yeah, because everyone's all about those TED Talks.
Yeah. Well, you know, last year we talked about a bunch of specific events, and then we got to the awards portion, which people were actually very excited about. And we had way more positive listener feedback about the awards than we did about the panels. So this year we're going to change it up a little bit. I'm going to point out sort of the four or five coolest panels that I saw on the schedule. You can, of course, search out this content at DICE's website. They typically post after the event has happened, which this has. They typically end up posting videos of this stuff, so you'll be able to find it out there. And rather than sum it up for you, I'm just going to tell you, like, check out these ones, and that way we can get to the awards portion faster.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, typically DICE awards, you know, recognize the cream of the crop in gaming and, you know, really just look at, you know, the successes in design.
Oh, I can't wait to see what they point out this year. It must be some real great games.
Is that like your cheap imitation of a Mickey Mouse voice?
That is exactly what it was. I was being facetious because I've already spoiled myself and I know who won what, and yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
In any event. So some of the cooler panels that they had, let's see, there was A Renaissance of Gaming or Just More of the Same. This was a panel by Eugene Jarvis, the CEO over at Raw Thrills, and Mark Cerny, president over at Cerny Games, being moderated by Mark Turmel, the senior creative director at Zynga. I'm sure that you can sort of figure out what they were talking about in terms of the direction that the industry is going in the future, microtransactions and what have you. There was also Strangers in a Strange Time, Gone Home's Place in the Changing Indie Landscape. This was a panel held by Steve Gaynor, one of the founders of the Fulbright Company.
Yeah.
And again, it does what it says on the tin. I would check this talk out. There should be video up archived already. And if there's not, I would expect that there will be shortly. Rex Kroll over at Media Molecule, he's a creative lead over there, did a panel called Using the Ordinary to Create the Extraordinary.
Work.
This was, of course, about games such as Little Big Planet and Tearaway, and again, making sort of really strange, interesting games. We also had The Human Brain is the Platform, Gaming in the New Golden Age, done by Hilmar Vager Peterson, the CEO over at CCP Games, whom you're probably familiar with for EVE Online,
yeah,
which we were just discussing. In fact, that is the panel where they discussed EVE Valkyrie being a Oculus exclusive.
Uh-huh. How about that thousands of dollars loss in EVE the other week, huh?
It was more than thousands. It was tens of thousands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, EVE, man, EVE is so amazing. I cannot wait until, like, 10 or 20 years from now when EVE doesn't exist anymore and people are writing, like, literary essays on, like, what EVE meant in terms of, like, how the human condition was reflected in the way that the players interacted with each other and, like, what it says that people were pumping in tens of thousands of dollars from their actual IRL banks to bankroll these giant warships to fight in a video game with.
So, Game Buoy episode 4000, look forward to that.
And last but not least, in the sort of Game Buoy's picks of the event, I wanted to point out Keiji Inafune's panel. He obviously is the CEO and conceptor over at Comcept.
Is he the Comceptor?
Man, whatever title he gives himself, I don't care. He's Inafune-san. He's a legend. His panel was Mighty Number 9, The Potential of Crowdfunding and New Prospects for the Gaming Industry. Which, again, sort of does what it says on the tin. Another interesting thing that came out of that panel is that we did get some new designs for some of the numbers that aren't Mighty Number 9.
Nice.
I guess in Mega Man terms, those would be Robot Masters. So we got new Robot Master designs.
Just go with it.
Really cool. One of them has a sword that looks just like those cool swords from Attack on Titan. So that was really neat to me because I love Attack on Titan. And I saw that Robot Master's sword. I was like, yes! In any event, it is time for what y'all came here to tonight's episode to hear. The 17th annual DICE Awards!
We're here on the red carpet, and we can't wait to see who's gonna bring home the gold tonight. We are just so excited here at the 17th annual DICE Awards. Oh, there's Captain Spike! Hi, Captain Spike!
Hi!
I noticed you're wearing a Kingdom Hearts couture tonight.
Well, you know, I got it at Hot Topic. It was designed just for me.
That's a very Alaska Thunderfuck voice.
Yeah, that was sort of the goal. Like, in my head, that's how red carpet people talk. In any event, let's get to it. Sidekick and the Outstanding Achievement in Art Direction goes to
The Last of Us from Sony Computer Entertainment America and Naughty Dog Incorporated.
You go, player two!
You know, this, of course, The Last of Us was a very, very celebrated game last year. A lot of people's GOTY, didn't personally make it on either of our lists, but, you know, we appreciate that this was a game that was notable in the community. I can't really speak to the art direction. I suppose it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I kind of disagree with this one. I look at the art direction, I was like, oh, it looks sort of generically AAA art direction. Like,
yeah, I mean, it wasn't like...
It's going for like a realistic, as realistic graphics as a PS3 can do, but it's not terribly stylized. It's not, I mean, it looks good, but like it doesn't have terribly special character designs or monster designs or environment designs. It's just, oh, here is a, passable facsimile of like a real environment.
Yeah, I mean, compared to something like Journey or even Sound Shapes, which has a very unique visual experience.
Or, again, not to toot the horn of Nintendo, but
I have a hard time with, like, man, that came out the same year as Mario 3D World. Like, what? Mario 3D World, you want to talk about art design and art direction? Let's talk about some of those Bowser Carnival Nights stages.
Those are so
with
fun.
All the neon lights and stuff. Like, dude, are you serious right now? Last of Us?
Yeah. Well, let's move on with the Outstanding Achievement in Animation Award.
And the award goes to The Last of Us by publisher Sony Computer Entertainment America and developer Naughty Dog Inc.
Okay.
Yeah, like, wait, what? Like, I was playing this game once, and, like, the other character stood there while zombies attacked her, except, like, she couldn't take damage. She, like, just stood there doing nothing. Like, I tried to shoot her, and, like, nothing happened. Like, it was really stiff, and, like, she didn't react to things that were happening. It wasn't, like, great animation.
Yeah. Do you know what had great art direction and animation? BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, I thought BioShock Infinite had great animation. I loved the way...
And low art direction.
Well, again, I mean, art direction, maybe, yeah. Some of the stuff in BioShock Infinite was really beautiful. Some of the vistas were amazing. Okay, yeah, I mean, certainly more than Last of Us.
It had a very soft...
But again, the point of this award, the point of this award is animation.
Right, right, right. I was just stepping back.
And when I look at things like the robots that would come after you in sort of the later acts of the game... Like, that was some great animation. Some of the Skyhook stuff, which I didn't necessarily love myself, but it was good animation. But, I mean, I guess let's give it to Last of Us.
I mean, I guess at least they didn't give it to Assassin's Creed 4.
You know, the funny thing is, it's funny that you said that to me because I thought Assassin's Creed 4 had great animation.
I've always found the animation in Assassin's Creed games to be a little problematic during the, like, the cutscenes. They're, like, very jittery a lot of times.
You know, I mean, that's true, but I was really thinking about the animations in terms of the way that characters interact with the environment around
them.
That's true. And I look at the Assassin's Creed 4 in particular, and, like, there's some great spots where, like, you're running, and, like, your character's animation is, like, I guess probably procedurally, like, just dealing with sort of, like, changes in, like, the elevation.
That's true.
So it's not like you're just running the same animation no matter what. Like, it's very variable based on, like, oh, his foot is in this little puddle, and so he's stepping a little deeper on that foot than he normally would.
That's true. These are,
like,
things
little
that
touches like that were way better, I thought, than what I saw in Last of Us, where, again, I felt like the characters were not animating, interacting with the world around them at all, even when, like, the... I'm sorry, you know, I keep thinking of them as zombies, but I guess they're, like, mushroom-infected humans or something.
Are they bears and wolves?
No.
Are they penis brothers?
I wish.
Ooh.
In any event, this has got to get better, right? And the award for Outstanding Character Performance goes to...
Ellie from The Last of Us, from Sony Computer Entertainment America and Naughty Dog Incorporated.
What? Like, okay... I mean, I guess, but, like, man, I wasn't the world's biggest The Walking Dead fan, but, like, maybe that could have gone to Clementine? Or, like, I don't know, maybe it could have gone to the character from Beyond Two Souls?
Yeah. You know, the thing is that Ellie was voiced and mo-capped by Ashley Johnson. Do you know who Ashley Johnson was?
Who was that?
Ashley Johnson, it was when, on Growing Pains, the Seaver family had a baby daughter, and then she got aged up 5 years. She was the aged-up Chrissy Seaver. So, like, not only is Ellie, like, probably not the most notable video game character of 2013, like, Chrissy Seaver wasn't even the most notable Seaver. Come on.
Yeah.
No offense, Ashley Johnson.
You know, I
no
know
offense.
That, I know that a lot of people were really, like, had strong emotional feels about Ellie. And, you know, maybe it's just because the game wasn't clicking for me, but I did not have those feels. And this sort of, like, outstanding character performance, like, I don't really get it. Like,
I'm sorry, but based on what I've seen from Growing Pains, Ashley Johnson did not give outstanding character performance as Chrissy Seaver.
In any event,
And the award for Outstanding Achievement in Original Music Composition goes to...
BioShock Infinite from 2K Games and Irrational Games. Okay, now this is one that, you know, I mean, I would have to really examine the entire list and see, you know, what else was nominated. But just going off of this is what they chose as their winner, I mean, I think that it's a pretty good choice because just of, like, what we talked about last year on our BioShock Infinite episode about how the music and the, you know, the use anachronistic music done in, you know, old-timey styles really, you know, just tied the game together and just really was a way of immersing you in the world of, I want to say, Rapture, Columbia.
And it did, you know, it, something else is that it really established a very spooky mood to hear these, this music and these compositions, sort of used inappropriately almost. Like, it really added to the feeling of the game. So I actually quite agree with this award. Like, I think that's a good one.
Yeah. All right. The award for Outstanding Achievement in Sound Design goes to The Last of Us from Sony Computer Entertainment America and Naughty Dog Incorporated.
What? Wait, what? What? Again?
Is this, is DICE Awards 2014 subtitled All Up on Last of Us's Dick?
Yeah, I mean, kind of it seems that way. Let's just move on. And the award for Outstanding Achievement in Story goes to...
The Last of Us from Sony Computer Entertainment America and Naughty Dog Incorporated.
Wait, are you fucking kidding me? I didn't even love, like, The Walking Dead. Again, like I said, but man, I thought The Walking Dead had a better story than
The Last
of Us.
I mean, you have to consider that The Walking Dead basically is just story.
Yeah, well, but again, even still, within the context of this award, like... Look, I'm not going to spoil it. I know that, like, the main characters whose names I can't remember's actions involving Ellie toward the end, like, I know that gets a lot of people in the heart feels. I get it. But, like, really? I just didn't think it was that good. I mean, as a game, but in particular, the story. Like, really? All right.
I mean, this is, like, we're talking about a AAA blockbuster title. You know, which typically story is not the selling point for these sorts of games. I mean, you know, people are like, oh, the story was so good. But, you know, when I really think of, like, outstanding achievement in story, it would be something that's, like, story-driven. Like, how about Gone Home or something?
Yeah, dude, Gone Home, I think, would be a way better contender for that.
All right, well, let's keep it moving. Outstanding Achievement in Gameplay Engineering goes to... Oh, this has got to be Tomb Raider, right?
Grand Theft Auto V by Rockstar Games and Rockstar North. Really?
Wait, is this the, like, Spike TV Video Game Awards or something?
Dude, it feels like it, right? Like, could we at least give that award to, like, Saints Row 4, which does everything Grand Theft Auto V did and more?
Yeah.
Gameplay engineer. Like, what?
I mean, like, what are their criteria here? Like, cause I would assume, like, physics and, you know, that sort of thing, which I have always found to be, you know, at least, you know, in my experience have been Grand Theft Auto's one of their weakest points. Like,
yeah, no, I certainly agree with you there.
I haven't played 5, so, you know, maybe this is just me being ignorant, but I just, like, what?
Yeah. All right, well, things have got to get better, right? And the award for Outstanding Achievement in Visual Engineering goes to...
The Last of Us.
Yay.
Action Game of the Year goes to... I mean, did you have something you wanted to say about visual...
You know, I will say, Last of Us for a PS3 game is very pretty. I don't think it's prettier than the next-gen or PC versions of many games. I say next-gen meaning now current-gen.
Like, yeah, for a PS3 game, it's beautiful, and maybe that's where visual engineering comes into. Like, oh, you guys did a lot with very little.
You know who does that every single game they put out? Square fucking Enix.
Yeah, dude, right? Or, like, I mean, I don't know. Admittedly, I am no expert on the matter, but I think Assassin's Creed 4 on PS4 looks better than Last of Us. And I know they have beefier tech, and so maybe, oh yeah, it's not as good of an engineering feat, but, like, I don't know. It just seems really funny. Like, it seems really masturbatory. We're just saying Last of Us over and over, basically.
Yeah, you know what I think of when I think outstanding achievement in visual engineering?
Mario 3D World?
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, way back, like, going way back.
Okay.
Shit like fucking Star Fox.
Oh, yeah, that, like, literally changed people's perceptions of, like, oh, this is how you could communicate ideas in a 3D space. Again, you know, for me, I look at stuff like this, and then I think about, like, Super Mario 3D World, and it's like, man, look at all of the shading, look at the crazy use of, like, all of the particle effects and stuff that are going on right now, and oh yeah, this game is totally locked at 60 frames a second right now. Like, I don't know, that seems like pretty damn good visual engineering. What? Like, The Last of Us, I mean, people are already asking for, like, a PS4 port so that it can look a little better and not have some of the frame rate animation-y hitch issues. Like, what? Alright, you were saying, was it Action Game of the Year you were saying?
You know, I want to take not a break here, but I have to wonder, is it possible that Sony and Naughty Dog and DICE, that we're dealing with, like, a payola controversy here?
I would never say that. Like, I would never make that accusation.
I'm not accusing, I'm saying, is it possible?
DICE is voted on, like, these awards are voted on by the members of DICE. Like, the members of the whatever people.
Academy of Interactive Science and Arts, or...
Exactly so. So they must have, you know, they must have really thought that Naughty Game.
Ooh, Naughty Dogs. Hey.
Naughty Dogs, The Last of Us. They must have really thought that it was, like, I guess, like, the best thing that came out last year, like, straight up.
I almost feel like we need to do a Naughty Dog episode, because...
Except, you know what I have to say about Naughty Dog is, like, oh, this is a company that repeatedly makes really pretty games... based around really hollow, shitty, simple...
Well, that's why I almost...
game designs that I don't think play super well.
That's why I almost think it's worth looking at.
Like...
And why? What it is that seems to appeal to so many,
like,
people.
Like, you ask people who played Crash Bandicoot, like, oh yeah, did you like Crash Bandicoot? And they're mostly like, yeah, fuck Mario. Like, it's not even about, like, oh yeah, Crash Bandicoot was a great game. It's like, oh yeah, he had attitude. He was way cooler than Mario.
Except that Super Mario 64 is one of the most important games of all time. But, yeah. Anyway.
Like, even people who love Uncharted, it's pretty much always like, oh yeah, Uncharted 2 is great. The first and third ones have problems, but the second one is great. Like, man. Like, that's another time. They were sweeping awards shows, and it's like, man, these games are not even that good. Like, they're pretty. But, like, otherwise it plays like a generic Lara Croft. Like, oh, this is Tomb Raider, but with more shooting. And yes, I do know that Tomb Raider then became Uncharted with more exploration. But, oh well.
Did it better.
I certainly think so.
So, Naughty Dog episode. Possibly look forward to it.
I don't know. If we're going to do that, we have to do an episode on, I don't know, some other, like, classic studios that don't get the right amount of attention. I don't know, like, something like Rare or, like... What? You're cackling, but,
I'm
like...
I'm sorry, but Rare had a little stretch of time where they were, like...
Argonaut. I don't know, like, there's studios that are worth... We'll talk about this. We'll talk about what studios are worth really taking a look at during year... I guess we're coming up on year three of Game Movie.
Year three of Game Movie. Action Game of the Year. Gotten a little side spiel there. The Action Game of the Year award... goes to Bioshock Infinite from 2K Games and Irrational Games. I mean, I guess you could call it an action game. I would have called it a first-person shooter, but...
Yeah, but if there isn't a Shooter of the Year award, and I don't know that there is... No, there doesn't appear to be, so that's okay. So, you know, I mean, yeah, Bioshock Infinite. It was a cool game. We did a whole episode on it here on Game Bowie, so... you know, cool game, and I'm happy to see it get some awards, and I'm happy that Last of Us didn't get that award, so hooray!
Hooray!
And the Adventure Game of the Year award.
Oh, this has
got to
be Tomb Raider. It's The Last of Us.
Really? All right, let's move on.
This just feels like, you know, typical award shows where it's like, oh yeah, that person is going to sweep all the awards.
Titanic.
Taylor Swift.
The Last of Us is like the Titanic or Taylor Swift of 2013 gaming. Overrated as shit. I was going to say some other rude things, but I probably know some people who liked Last of Us. I don't want to insult them. If you enjoyed Last of Us, that's good for you. I didn't think it broke new ground other than being
Last of Us
pretty.
Is totally unable to keep a healthy relationship with a man.
Fighting Game of the Year. And the award for Fighting Game of the Year goes to...
Injustice, Gods Among Us from Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment and NetherRealm Studio. Now, what are your thoughts about this? Because you are a fighting game aficionado, and in a year where we saw Injustice and Killer Instinct...
I would have given it to Killer Instinct, but Injustice was a pretty cool game.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel it stacks up as a fighting game and, like, how it's designed?
Well, you know, it's basically a Mortal Kombat game without the Mortal Kombat skin. It's not...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as technical as I prefer my games to be, which is probably why I would have preferred to see this award go to Killer Instinct, which I think is unquestionably a better designed and better playing and technically more interesting looking game. But I, again, you know, I do think Injustice was great. I'm somewhat flummoxed by the fact that it didn't go to something like Dive Kick. I would have seen Dive Kick really as having been more interesting than Injustice, certainly. But, okay, whatever. I mean, it's a cool game, and, you know, I'm happy to see it get some awards, because I did think it was a cool game.
What do you think, if you were in the DICE voting chair, what do you think their reason for choosing Injustice would have been?
It was on all platforms, and it was good. To me, Killer Instinct having been an Xbox One exclusive probably did it more harm than good in terms of voting, because probably a lot of these voters had not even played the game, I mean, at this point. Like,
yeah.
Because you figure...
It's a personal problem.
Well, yeah, but you figure voting must have been done, what, like a month after the game came out. People didn't even have consoles yet, maybe. I'm really just trying to wrap my head around why Injustice would win over Killer Instinct. I'm having a hard time with that.
Yeah. All right, the award for role-playing or massively multiplayer game of the year goes to Diablo 3 from Blizzard Entertainment and Blizzard Entertainment.
You know, I have to say, role-playing slash massively multiplayer game of the year, okay, that's a really weird distinction, but I assume they're talking about the console versions of Diablo 3, and actually, the console versions of Diablo 3 are quite good.
Yeah, I'm personally holding off until the PS4 version is out. But, you know,
I rented it from Gamefly, and now I'm waiting for the PS4 version. I'm going to buy it day one. I'm going to pay full price for it. Like, I'm excited to play that.
Yeah. I mean, Blizzard really did a good job. But, I mean, it's just interesting when you think of role-playing game, and then it goes to Diablo 3. Kind of the state of JRPGs in Western game industry.
To be fair, I mean,
market,
although
rather.
I will say now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of bullshit that Final Fantasy XIV or Realm Reborn didn't get that award.
Yeah, I mean, at least for Most Improved.
Right? No, the thing is, Realm Reborn is actually a really great massively multiplayer game. Like, a hell of a lot better than Diablo 3, I tell you what.
Yeah.
In any event, the award for Strategy / Simulation Game of the Year, and the award goes to...
XCOM Enemy Within from 2K and Firaxis Games.
Woo!
I know that you enjoyed XCOM a lot.
Yeah, it's a tremendous game, and I'm going to just assume that the Civ expansion Brave New World was not eligible.
Right.
Because if it was eligible and XCOM still won, then that's some fucking bullshit.
Yeah, like a Civ 5 Brave New World like changes the like end game. Like
it changes the entire game.
Well, it does. It does. But, I mean, it dramatically changes the end game.
And it's a great game. So, anyway, what a useless fucking category. Casual Game of the Year! And the award goes to...
Flappy Bird! No, I'm kidding. It goes to Plants vs. Zombies 2 from Electronic Arts and PopCap.
Woo! Man, you know, I wish it could have gone.
I almost
Flappy
called
Bird.
It Plants and Zombies, like, which would be like me being an award show presenter who like totally like the award goes to I messed up the title. I'm stumbling over my words. Yeah, that's cool. I like the original Plants vs. Zombies. I'm much happier to see PopCap getting recognition than something like Zynga.
Yeah. Oh hey.
I mean, my thing is, though, like, I mean, if we're going to recognize a PopCap game, Peggle 2?
Yeah. I don't necessarily know that I see Casual Game of the Year as even being an award worth handing out. Like, what kind of shitty game designation is that? But okay, if you're going to do it, I would have thought Peggle 2 would have been a better choice, TBH. Anyway.
Yeah, Peggle's way more casual, laid back.
Family Game of the Year. And the award for Family Game of the Year goes to...
Super Mario 3D World from Nintendo and Nintendo EAD Tokyo Software Development Group number 2.
That was my Mickey Mouse voice. No, but thank God at least 3D World got recognized for something.
You know, I have to tell you, it kind of fucking pisses me the shit off.
Family that... game, let's give it to Nintendo.
Right?
It's for families. Nintendo is for families and not for hardcore gamers.
I have to tell you, I have tremendous respect for DICE awards and what they typically represent. This year's kind of pissing me the hell off. Family Game of the Year. Take that shit home. Slag, give me the next one.
The award for Racing Game of the Year goes to...
Forza Motorsport 5. By Microsoft Studios and Turn 10 Studios.
Woo! Although, do we... I mean, just the whole idea of racing game, this is them basically saying, oh, we value realistic car simulation over something like a kart game or something like a Need for Speed.
Well, you know, and I'm going to say... Forza Motorsport 5 as a sim, like, it's a great sim, but I don't see how it places above something like Need for Speed Rivals or Need for Speed Most Wanted on Wii U that came out in March of 2013, so it certainly would have been eligible.
I guess it's really just
even,
a matter
even
of
Even Gran
taste.
Turismo 6 came out on PS3 last year.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a little confounded here, like...
Forza is typically, like, not really my thing, and I mean, I feel like, you know, it would really require a racing games episode to discuss the differences. I really like racing games, though, like...
I love racing games. We could have a talk on that. Anyway, let's move forward.
The award for Sports Game of the Year goes to...
FIFA 2014 by Electronic Arts and EA Canada.
Football, football, football. It is football. It's international football.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't looking at you like, what are you talking about football?
Goal!
My problem here is that MLB The Show came out last year, and I mean, admittedly, MLB The Show comes out every year, but MLB The Show 13 was so good. Like, last year's MLB The Show was so good. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand how FIFA 14, which by most accounts was lackluster and a disappointment, won.
I thought that FIFA was the one sports game that was actually the... I mean, not from my experience. I thought that's the one we talked about that was being heralded as the best of the Xbone and PS4 sports games.
Oh, it was of the PS4 and Xbone sports games, but as far as I'm aware, a lot of players were saying that there was very little innovation this year and that it was just... the same version with prettier graphics.
Oh.
Admittedly, I have to admit, I did not really play FIFA 14. I did play the show, MLB The Show, and so that's why I'm kind of QQ about it, because MLB The Show was so good.
You just made your entire dream team of Giants studs.
The already existent team of Giants are all the dream team studs that I need.
True.
Oh, hey, this is a good one. Downloadable Game of the Year! And the award for Downloadable Game of the Year goes to...
Flappy Bird! No, just kidding. It goes to Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, from 505 Games and Starbreeze Studios.
Woo!
Woo, 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 woo!
Okay, actually, that's an incredible game, and it absolutely deserves this award. It kind of miffs me that they separate it out, like, oh, this game gets judged on its own because it's downloadable. But it is a great game, so I can't hate. Superb game. I think it's on PlayStation Plus right now, so...
It is, yeah. I just grabbed it on PS Plus.
Yeah, if you have a PS3 and PlayStation Plus, grab it. It's an amazing experience, truly.
Now, I had thought, maybe I'm just imagining it, but I had thought we were going to be getting at least a PS4 or... If not, PS4 and Xbox One release. Was that a thing that was ever... And that's because this, of course, is for 360, PC, and PS3.
You know, I don't recall hearing that.
Huh. You know, just with all the indies coming to PS4, maybe I just was a little confused. But congratulations, brothers. Penis brothers. All right. The award for Handheld Game of the Year goes to... anything on 3DS, because Vita...
And the award goes to The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, Woo! By Nintendo and Nintendo EAD Software Development Group Number 3.
Woo!
Yeah!
All right, Zelda. Now, I mean, this is another thing, like, we're kind of looking at these categories. Handheld Game of the Year, I mean, when you think of everything that came out for 3DS last year... I mean, because I guess you can include Vita. you have to include Vita in there. I guess you can include mobile, except mobile is its own category. But I mean, when you think of how many games came out for 3DS last year, I mean, I liked A Link Between Worlds a lot. I think it was great, but I mean, how do you determine that that's the handheld game of the year? I mean, I think a lot of the 3DS titles last year offered equally engaging but very different experiences. And so, I mean, like, what is the criteria for handheld that it made it easy, that, like, oh, you could just pick it back up again, and that the handheld aspect of it is what made it award-winning? Kind of like what you were saying about the downloadable game of the year. Like, I'm kind of seeing that some of these... categories are problematic.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. They're just saying Game of the Year for handheld platforms, and they're giving it to Link Between Worlds. A game which, you know, all things being equal, I think deserves that kind of award, certainly. I do think it's Game of the Year material, and, you know, I think that the arbitrary assignment of handheld game, as you say, I think it's irritating. I don't really see the point. I absolutely think that Zelda Link Between Worlds competes for Adventure Game of the Year. And I'm going to be honest with you, I think Link Between Worlds is a better game than Last of Us. Like, just point blank, I think Link Between Worlds is a better game.
Yep. The award for Mobile Game of the Year goes to... Flappy Birds, just kidding. Poor Flappy Birds.
Mobile Game of the Year goes to Plants vs. Zombies 2 by Electronic Arts and PopCap Entertainment.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Okay, cool. I guess. Online Game of the Year. And the award goes to...
World of Tanks from Wargaming Public Company Limited 105 and Wargaming.net. You know, I have not personally played World of Tanks, but I know that people who have played it, like, say, yeah, it's, like, legit. It's, like, really good.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really great pick. Like, that's a pretty good pick. So, well done, Dice. Good pick. All right,
well done, Dice. Good pick, yeah.
And the award for...
What's the deal with The Last of Us?
Please stop. And the award for Outstanding Innovation in Gaming goes to...
The Last of Us from Sony Computer Entertainment America and Naughty Dog Entertainment Incorporated.
Wait. For Outstanding Innovation in
What's
Gaming?
What's the deal with The Last of Us?
Like, that game
That's
is...
That's a game about nothing.
That game is literally Resident Evil 4's escort missions stretched into a game. Like, it's a whole game of Resident Evil 4's escort missions. Like, what the fuck?
What's the deal with The Last of Us?
Oh my gosh, like, I'm having a hard time with this. Like, outstanding innovation in gaming? Like, okay, you had some alright mocap, and you told a story that I guess is a little bit more adult in its way than most game stories, but I fail to see how that's innovative. Like, what the shit? Like, you want to talk about innovative and use stories, let's talk about Beyond Two Souls. And about the fact that the story in Beyond Two Souls can change in so many different and subtle ways that most gamers think it's actually very linear because the game fits so well that they thought that was the only way the game could be played. Like, if we're going to talk about story as innovation, I sure as hell do not think Last of Us takes the cake. Like, again, I go to Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I certainly go to Beyond Two Souls on that regard, because again, the game is so seamless on when you're making choices, and sometimes it doesn't even communicate to you, like, oh, this is a branching point where, like, oh, hit right shoulder to perform a Paragon action and left shoulder to have a Renegade action. Like, no, Beyond Two Souls, like, oh, I'm on a shitty date. I can sit around until the game gives me a conversation prompt, but if I want to just get up and walk out of this restaurant, I can do that. And the game has story for that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I mean, like, communicate, also, like, oh, you can leave, dog. Like, you just gotta do it.
You know, I was gonna make a point, but I think I'll save it until after we've finished off the awards. So, let's keep going. The award for Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction goes to...
The Last of Us by Sony Computer Entertainment America and Naughty Dog Inc. Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction. Okay.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The DICE 2014 Game of the Year, which represents the pinnacle of the gaming experience in the year 2013. The best of the best, the cream of the crop. The award goes to... Captain Spike, do you want to open the envelope?
All right. And the award goes to... The Last of Us. Alright,
So, my problem with this year's DICE Awards is that when you look at last year's winners, we saw things like Journey being big winners for outstanding innovation, online gameplay, sound design, music composition. Like, Journey won many awards. Walking Dead, of course, was also one. And it just, I mean, it's really weird when you look at, not only were some of the, categories not here this year, like, I did not see an award for Outstanding Achievement in Connectivity this year.
Although, admittedly, who would you have given it to?
But, I mean, just when you look at last year's family game was Skylanders Giant. Web-based game was SimCity Social. Casual game was Journey. I would not consider, like, Journey and Plants vs. Zombies to be in the same realm of casual gaming. So I really feel like we're seeing, you know, what is the criteria? Like, what are they really looking for? And I mean, I guess that's just why, in some ways, the compartmentalizing of games into categories like this just doesn't really contribute to an effective discussion on game design and, you know, it's the various accolades.
Girl, I have been singing that song about games and even about music for forever. I do not see the value in that level of, like, scrutinization for application of categorization and labels and what have you. I just don't see the value to that.
And I mean, I think really, you know, in the past we've been able to, you know, find value in the DICE Awards, you know, selections, more or less, you know, disagreeing with some of them, but I think it's just really
a
larger
talking point. There was typically a lot of recognition and respect and appreciation for the artistic merits of gaming
right.
in previous years.
I think it's really just in a larger sense that award shows are problematic. I fucking hate award shows. I'm sorry.
I love award shows. My problem with this is that it's, again, it's a triple A circle jerk. Like, let's just give every award to Grand Theft Auto
V but really,
and Last of Us.
Isn't every award show for every sort of medium basically a triple A circle jerk?
You know, it's easy to say that, and
like
I appreciate that you're being, combative about it. But at the same time, if you take a step back, again, by your own admission, last year there were some great awards given at DICE. Journey got a lot of attention. That certainly wasn't a triple A game that you would expect to get a lot of attention. So no, I think there really can be a lot of merit. I don't know that I necessarily see that trend in effect, where games that, and, you know, other media, but we're talking about games, where the right games get the right amount of respect at these awards shows, but, you know, again, I do think that it can be a tool to really call out, like, oh yeah, we appreciate this game is really important, this game's really special, and, you know, for people who haven't played game X or game Y, it can be a really great way to turn someone on to those games. And I really, my problem is when you see something like this year in particular for the DICE Awards, where every award went to the same two games, like, that doesn't serve anybody but giving box pull quotes for the inevitable Game of the Year release of Last of Us. Otherwise, no, just, you gave every award to Last of Us, even the awards that I don't think it deserved at all. I have a really hard time seeing how you could make a reasoned, legitimate, rational argument for giving Last of Us outstanding innovation in gaming.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing that's really notable is that last year, we were kind of talking about how we felt that overall, DICE's selections, you know, with a few variances, kind of were in line with what we thought were the strengths of 2012 in gaming. So, it's just very interesting that this year it's just totally, totally, like, opposite of that.
Yeah. Well, and anyway, let's move on. We've just crossed the 2-hour mark in the recording studio. So let's just point out there were two more panels, that were probably worth taking a look at that we have not looked at personally. One of them was Virtual Reality, The Road Ahead, which was held by Palmer Luckey, the founder of Oculus VR, and Brandon Uribe, the president of Oculus VR. There was also Building a Spectator Sport for the Digital Age, which was about the rise of esports and sort of where esports are going. And that was done by Mike Sepso, the co-founder and president of Major League Gaming.
Nice.
With that having been said, I think it's time to get a little gossipy.
Yeah.
Rumor has it,
Yoshi's New Island 3DS XL.
apparently has a bundle planned for March 14th when the game releases.
Bring it on. I mean, I don't find this very hard to believe because I think we're at the point where there have been the most, I think that the 3DS, I mean, not just the XL, but the 3DS in general just has the most variations of, releases. And I mean, why not? It's a handheld. Make it a little fashion accessory.
Right.
Work that, portable couture, hunty.
And you know, on that point, let's also point out that the original DS, and the DS Lite in particular, had tons of limited editions. I don't know that the 3DS has actually caught up to the DS Lite.
Really?
Yet. The DS Lite had so many. When I went to the Nintendo World Store in New York, which was in sort of the last days of the DS, they had a display case, like a museum display case, that had more than 50 different DS
That's
Lites.
True. Like, you, when you think of the DS Lite really being the first one to kind of couture-a-size...
Couture-a-size
The portable Nintendo console. But, I mean, even then, you think back to the Play It Loud series of Game Boy. You look back to the Game Boy Advance SP with, like, the classic Famicom NES. Because I guess, really, like, that was different than a Famicom controller, wasn't it? An NES controller one. You know, so, like, it really kind of, the portable realm for Nintendo really has been kind of the, you know,
and we,
different colors and stuff.
And we talked about that during our version
reversion.
We did,
version reversion, that's right. So,
in any event, we have here news that UK retailer Base had listed a bundle for Yoshi's New Island coming out with the game at launch, and IGN confirmed the bundle's existence for North America, though they also confirmed that the listing image on Base's website was a fan mock-up, which also indicates that they know what the real one is going to look like.
Interesting.
In any event, we don't have any information on what it's actually going to look like. Nintendo has not announced it yet.
It could be like a Yoshi silhouette. It could be just a straight-up Yoshi egg pattern.
Dude, if it was a Yoshi egg pattern, I'd be on board for that.
I thought you didn't like Yoshi.
I like Yoshi well enough.
I thought you've considered him the Tails of the Mario franchise.
I like Tails.
Since when?
I've always liked Tails.
You hated Tails.
No, I hate Knuckles.
Ooh, girl, we can't go there. There are reports that after Yaiba Ninja Gaiden's Z ships, that Team Ninja is going to be shifting its development focus to an unnamed PS4 game.
You know, I have to say, and that is something that Yosuke Hayashi said, as translated by Gematsu. So it seems very likely to me that that's a real thing that's going to happen. We don't know what game it is yet, but if I were a betting man, I would say we haven't seen a proper Ninja Gaiden in a while. Yaiba Ninja Gaiden Z, as you may recall, is a completely different beast. It's a spin-off. It does not play like a traditional Ninja Gaiden game.
Yeah, it's, you're fighting zombies as Yaiba, a cyborg ninja who is seeking revenge.
Against the normal protagonist of these games, Ryu Hayabusa.
Yeah, and of course this is being co-developed by
Concept.
So, year of Concept, really.
So yeah, that's something to look forward to. I like Team Ninja a lot. And last, but certainly not least, according to a report by the Wall Street Journal, you know, Disney Interactive had some layoffs, unfortunately.
Little doom and gloom.
Little sad, yeah. But in this same report, they discussed an in-development versions, in-development versions of Disney Infinity relating to the Star Wars and Marvel franchises.
So now, is this, like, a Marvel Infinity and Star Wars Infinity, or just content for Disney Infinity coming from these franchises?
Well, you know, something that I believe we've discussed here on the show is that Disney Infinity in its current iteration does not have the architecture in it for DLC. The content in the game, like the Frozen figures that just came out recently, they were already in the game at launch.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the figures just unlock them. So, They would be figures, and hopefully the figures would be able to be used in older Infinities, but to me, they would have to be doing new game software that had that data already. And my understanding is that the reason the game was designed this way is because it was centered around the last-gen experience. They still did a Disney Infinity for the original Wii platform that has very lackluster support for DLC, although it is, strictly speaking, possible.
Yeah.
So I would have to guess that Disney Infinity 2, which I'm assuming will be a thing later this year, will hopefully have a more forward-thinking and expandable scope.
And I mean, with the current gen consoles in mind.
Oh, absolutely. Although I'd probably stick with my Wii U version, but, you know.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm sure that would be... I mean, you think of Disney, they, when they can, release it for, like... They'd still be releasing for Game Boy Color if they could.
Well, absolutely. That's why they designed the original Infinity around allowing the Wii to have a version.
In any event, we look forward to that.
We really do. You know, I love Marvel. I love Star Wars. This cannot possibly be news to anyone who's listening at home.
I mean, what fanboy doesn't want Boba Fett and Wolverine, like, duking it out?
I hate Boba Fett, so I don't want that. I love Wolverine, though, so I'd be down for that. And, you know, hopefully it would be more than just, like, Wolverine and Cap and Iron Man and Thor. I'd like to see some weird characters get figures, just like in the Disney Infinity line, how, you know, there was a lot of popular acts, as if it's music. There was a lot of, you know, popular franchises, but there was some sort of weirder picks, too. And, for example, I didn't...
Davy Jones.
right, but I didn't expect them to do a Jack Skellington figure. I mean, certainly Nightmare Before Christmas is big business, but it's not on the scale of, like, Frozen, or Toy Story,
or Wreck-It Ralph.
So, you know, I hope we see that kind of stuff in the Marvel Disney Infinity. I hope we do see, like, a Jean Grey figure, or a Doctor Strange figure or something. Assuming this is even a real thing that exists.
Now, the thing that's interesting, and you'll have to clarify, because I'm not familiar with all the terms of the Marvel deal, but the only issues they have are with movies, right? Like, not with licenses, so Disney is not prevented from putting out, like, Spider-Man in a Disney and Marvel Infinity. Or are they?
No, Marvel, there is a... Okay, the Marvel rights are very strange. It's not like the rights of a lot of these other properties around the world from other companies. For example, Sony does have the rights to Amazing Spider-Man movie games.
Oh, right.
And not Sony, like, in terms of PlayStation, but Sony in terms of Sony Pictures. They're involved in the creation of the Amazing Spider-Man movie games.
Right.
But Marvel still has agreements to do Spider-Man games and have Spider-Man in Marvel games, such as the Marvel Heroes game online, or right. Capcom's Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
I mean, when you think about it, it would almost be like, oh, Marvel can't publish Spider-Man comics anymore because of Sony. So, yeah, I was just interested how that influences it. But
yeah, that's actually something, and I mean, I certainly, I'm not a master of copyright law, but
well, I mean,
I have
we were talking about Marvel versus Capcom.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say, that it has always been a known property that, or a known, it's always been known that the Marvel licensing for video games is very strange, because unlike most licenses, however they do their contracts or whatever, they don't, like, grant exclusive license. Like, you might get, like, oh, you are the only one that has the rights to make a Marvel fighting game, but we're still going to have RPGs or whatever done by other people. So, it's sort of unique in that respect.
Yeah.
In any event...
Let's move on. We have...
Smash or Smash!
Smash or Smash!
And it's a Smash and Smash this week.
It sure is, because I didn't feel like trolling the internet for shitty articles this week. Let's have a little bit of light. This first Smash is courtesy of KTaroE37 on Twitter. Slagkick?
Yeah, this is over at Polygon, called Street Fighter 2 and Oral History. And, you know, like?
Oral.
Oh, you. I'd like to have an oral history with Guile, though. What, I go for the arm? The funny thing is that as usual, the presentation on these polygon features is just flawless. There's a little, you're able to play Guile's theme goes with everything. Yeah, this is actually on the Polygon article. So, of course, like, you know, just the presentation of these Polygon features is just fantastic. But, I mean, in particular, this is a really great history of Street Fighter II, which, of course, is a classic, even for those who don't consider themselves fighting game aficionados. And, I mean, really, you know, just the type of thing that we really live for here at Game Buoy. So,
yeah, this article is effing incredible. And, you know, I have to say, if Keitaro hadn't pointed it out, I would have missed it. So thank you.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I found some problematic things over at Polygon lately. It started out really promising, and, you know, then there were certain
allegations?
And, you know, certain people who have started contributing that have made questionable choices in the way they present. So I'm glad that Keitaro recognized this article, shouted it out to us, because really one thing that Polygon has done is these incredible features, like really in the spirit of like kind of the old 1UP features that we used to see. And I mean, just really, you know, in-depth looks at issues in gaming or, you know, history of games. So, I mean, just really, really great, really well researched, and really a shining example of what we live for in gaming journalism, hunty.
And that was written by Matt Leone, or Leone, I don't know if that E is a hard E.
Ooh, either way, but, sounds hot.
But he's been a frequent collaborator with Jeremy Parrish, dating back to the 1UP days for a long time.
Ooh, you were saying dating, I'm like, ooh, Jeremy Parrish and Matt Leone were dating.
Ooh, and speaking of Jeremy Parrish, I wanted to point out this article on US Gamer called What Bravely Default Gets Right. There's more than just Final Fantasy nostalgia at work in Square's extraordinary new 3DS RPG, written by Parrish.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's basically just going over how basically the game makes all the right choices in terms of design and turns even like gameplay elements that people maybe wouldn't normally like microtransactions and social elements, but it leverages them in such a way that, like, it's a joy to see your friends pop online and refresh their characters in your game world. Like, it's designed in such a way that these are viewed as, like, good things and not just, like, bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really, like, and just with the overall huge warm reception that I've seen amongst our friends and our listeners for this game, really the way to do the essence of social mobile elements in the right way. And as far as this article is concerned, I think it really, you know, despite some issues we've had with, you know, from a podcasting perspective of how the new Retronauts thing has been handled and kind of, you know, Parrish's response to that, you know, we've had our issues with that. But I mean, I really do think that Jeremy Parrish is one of still the few gaming journalists out there who really, you know, does it right, who, you know, I have to say US Gamer kind of got off to a bumpy start, but I mean, he's really, you know, turned it into, you know, it's not 1UP, but, you know, he's still looking at, you know, he really looks at games from a design perspective and tries to not just go for that sensationalist bullshit. So, well done, Parrish.
Yeah, well done. I have to say, you know, from the podcasting perspective, it still really rubs me the wrong way that, you know, he was asking for tens of thousands of dollars to do a podcast when, you know, we here on the good ship Game Buoy do a money-losing podcast.
Right? Like, I mean, my thing is that it's like, oh, we need to rent out studios, and then he moved to D.C., so they have to do it on Skype anyway.
Yeah, right? It's, I don't know, the whole thing I have a lot of issues with. Yeah. But removed from that, I think that he is an extremely valued and valuable and authentic voice in the games journalism space, and I think that we're really at sort of a crux in sort of the gaming history where we really need good, honest, authentic voices right now that are left of center, that are left of the dial, that aren't just telling us over and over that The Last of Us was the best game made last year. And looking at games from a really critical, honest perspective, I think we need those voices, and I think Jeremy Parrish is one of them, despite my issues with him in other regards. Right.
Do you know who else I think one of those voices is?
Who's that?
You, Captain Spike.
Bitch. You ain't got to make fun of me.
No.
Let's move on.
I was being sincere. You bring a left-of-center voice to gaming
discussion. Hey, well, what's going on?
I said, hey, what's going on?
Oh my god, what you playing?
So?
He played some Bravely Default.
Sorry to spoil.
See, you just took it to a hair metal place. I don't mind that you spoiled. You spoiled my what's up, how dare you? Yeah, no, so, as you probably heard from Slaggy McWaggy, I'm playing Bravely Default Flying Fairy, or I'm sorry, as they call it here, Where the Fairy Flies, and it's fucking amazing. It's like if Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy IX had a baby, it would be Bravely Default Flying Fairy.
They had a mobile social baby.
Yeah, right? With like, I don't know, like,
hey, the, no,
sperm
Final...
donorship by, like, a Kairosoft
game. Ew, don't
or
talk about... Don't talk about Bravely Default and sperm. That's super gross.
At least all the characters are 18 in the U.S.
I mean, really to think about it is that it's Final Fantasy V and IX's child with a modern sensibility.
Exactly so, yes, really. The dialogue is superb. I really enjoy the voice acting. The job system, it has probably the best job system I've ever played.
That's great. I can't wait to pick it up.
The scenario so far is super good. Like, I'm actually really, really into this scenario. I'm only, like, 9 hours in, but I'm, like...
Only 9 hours
on the edge of my fucking
seat. This game
seat.
Just came out, and you're only 9 hours
in. I love all of the character voices. Like, not in terms of voice acting, though I do like that. But, like, the way they're written is all really good. Even characters who, like, oh, she's the tough, rough girl... Or like, oh, she's like the temple priestess. Or like, oh, he's like the philanderer that womanizes.
Womanizer.
They're all written in such a way that, like, I really like these characters. And I'm not used to that. I don't feel that way a lot about, like, JRPGs. I feel about these characters the way I felt about, like, Final Fantasy V and VI characters. So it's a big deal for me.
Yeah.
I have not connected with characters in a Final Fantasy game like this in a really long time.
I mean, I think it really seems like, you know, hopefully it sells well. I don't have sales figures for, like, first week or whatever, but...
No one does. It's been out for, like, 3 days.
But, you know,
It came out Friday. Like, that was the day before yesterday.
I mean, because it did well in Japan, right?
It did tremendous in Japan, yes.
So, I mean, it really seems like this is... going to be the start of a very successful new franchise.
And, you know, it's anecdata at best, but I know that Jeremy over at Koopa Club got the last copy at his local store. A bunch of my followers on Twitter were talking about how they were getting the last copies at their stores. People at the SF Gamers group on Facebook were talking about how they were getting the last copies at their stores. It looks like this game is selling out in places like the day it went on sale.
That's great.
So that is, I think, a sign of tremendous demand for a game that, frankly, I think Nintendo published and advertised and pushed forward in a really great way, what with supporting the demo in all regions.
Yeah.
And, really hyping the game up. So, I mean, normally I would probably not be quite so optimistic about the advertising efforts, but, like, this game deserves it. This is a tremendous game. If you like JRPGs at all, if you like classic Final Fantasies at all, give this game a go. It is superb. I am enjoying it so much.
Yeah, I can't wait to... I'm probably going to pick it up at some point this week and hopefully
Excellent.
Be able to talk about it next time.
And we can do some of the social stuff if you do, so please
yeah.
do.
For this week, however, I want to talk about... I'll start off with a little bit of talking
Monica
about...
Monica in my life.
No. I want to start out talking about a little bit about, I picked up Crimson Dragon. It was on sale.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, that recently just got a, online
multiplayer
patch. So, I'm looking forward to playing that with Captain Spike and, possibly, the Book Pirate on Twitter, who's like the only other person I know out there in our listener land who actually has an X-Bone.
Delvin over from VG Realness.
Oh, does he? Yeah. Oh, excellent. Well,
If he's to be believed, he said it was listening to us talk about Killer Instinct that sold him on it.
Aww.
We heart you.
Yeah, so, you know, Crimson Dragon had been controversial, as we talked about a few months back. Wow, it's been a while since the consoles have been out.
It's been a minute, yeah.
But, you know, I think for the price, and I don't like referring to price, you know, as, you know, oh, well, I wouldn't pay a full price for it. But, I mean, for the price, I think it's a fun little game. And, you know, I appreciate that you know, if you want, you can buy upgrades for your dragon or whatever, but that you're not forced to play it that way is
That's good. Always my thing with microtransactions. I don't actually mind them as long as you don't have to use them.
It's just like, oh, if you want to take mom's credit card, don't take mom's credit card, by the way. But if you want to take mom's credit card and buy $90 worth of Crimson Dragon points or whatever and upgrade your dragon so that you can just be uber elite right away, you can, but, you know, or you could just grind and work for it like, you know, in a traditional game you would. Or, you know, you can just buy a dragon pack. I don't even know what the microtransactions look like in this game, honestly, just because I haven't investigated it. I'm just making things up here, but yeah, so I spent a little bit of time with that. Most of my time has been spent with my PS4 that I just found the other week. So I put in a little time with Sound Shapes, which of course is, you know, one of my favorite rhythm games. Just, you know, beautiful.
And did I read Twitter right? Did you stream that?
I did. I tried streaming it a little bit. And I really, I was really impressed with how seamless the, you know, streaming function, the share function is, you know, which was one of the much hyped features of the PS4. And I'm really looking forward to when that's going to be, you know, when Twitch or whatever is going to be available on Xbox One, because I'd like to be able to do so on that console as well. But yeah, apparently, you know, streaming Sound Shapes, it was hard to hear me talking just because of the music in the levels. So maybe not the most ideal game to be streaming, but some of our listeners popped by, so thanks for... I really just wanted to kind of try out the streaming in... had a lot of fun with it.
That's cool. What is your username on Twitch?
My Twitch username is Slackkick, so.
Excellent. I'm Capt Spike, CaptSpike. I'll have to add you right now.
Yeah, yeah. What I've been spending the most time with is Tomb Raider Definitive Edition. You know, I'm glad that I actually, you know, I'm kind of glad I missed out on it because it looks so good on PS4, like, it seriously is probably maybe it's just me being excited over it, but I think it's like the best looking game on PS4 right now. Like, I think that the, enhancements they did, I mean, you know, your mileage may vary, like, Drive Club, Need for Speed looks like gorgeous. And, you know, there's other stuff out there that, you know, I mean, I can't really speak to like the shooters and stuff, but I mean, it just really looks amazing. And I mean, also just to credit for the game itself, how it was designed, I mean, it really feels like an Assassin's Creed or an Uncharted, but done better. Like, it controls so smoothly. I really like the way that the game world kind of, like, you know, I mean, I don't know if it was just me, like, it almost felt like, oh, I didn't make this fall. Like, and it was hard for me to tell if the game intended for me to fall there or if I just fell and then as a result I had a new objective. Like, you having played the game, do you have feedback in regards to that? Like, does the game change objectives based on, like, what happens? Or, like, when I fell, was it like, oh, that actually was part of the game?
More like that. Like, that's part of
it. The thing is that it doesn't feel shoehorned in, so, like, I really like that. I really like, of course, Laura's new characterization, which had been, like, you know, a big point of discussion last year.
Yeah. And it is pretty linear. You know, there's some cool stuff in terms of the way it's designed, but it's more like a Metroidvania design.
The thing
game.
Is that it doesn't feel... It feels like you're still exploring, and it feels like...
Well, and that's part of why I've been all about this game for the last, you know, since it came out. I've been championing this game for forever, because I do think it's incredibly well-designed and super organic in its design, which is a big deal for me.
My thing that is really interesting is that it's not that there are necessarily new ideas. I mean, it's AAA action, exploration, platforming with minor RPG elements. It's, you know, quick time events, but the presentation of it is just really polished. Like, you know, when you're trying to climb out of the cave and you're dodging boulders, like, just like, oh, you gotta press this bumper button. That makes you, you know, just really, like, thoughtful, not just like, oh, X, triangle, square. It's like, no, use this bumper button to do a barrel roll. Not really a barrel roll, but, you know. So, yeah, I'm glad I waited, because, I mean, I just think it looks amazing on the PS4, and, you know. So, that's what I've been playing. And, you know, that just about does it for today. As always, if you feel like responding to our Game Buoy extras from this episode, please do so on any of our social media. Speaking of social media, we love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter. Our Twitter is GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
You can find Captain Spike on Twitter at Spike Point.
At Spike Point.
It's not at Spike Point.
No, it's at Spike Point.
Oh, at, I thought you said at Spike Point.
No, at Spike Point.
And you can find myself at Slagkick.
At Slagkick?
At Slagkick.
Like an at? This is Star Wars now?
Wait, you seriously don't pronounce those AT-AT? You pronounce it at?
No, I mean, they're AT-ATs, but the fandom just calls them at-ats.
Why would they do that? That's
because
silly.
It's cute and funny?
At-at. Okay, that's kind of cute. You can tumble with us. You can tumble with us on Tumblr. You can plus one us on Google Plus. You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy loves to hear from you.
No, he really does. He's very cute.
He's really cute.
All right. Everything over.
I wasn't done. Don't punch me. Don't threaten like you're going to punch me. Our home base is GameBuoy.org, where you can find our entire archive of episodes and show notes for every episode. And
some hidden nudes, too.
Wait, who's nudes?
Bitch, don't say that. There's not really any nudes there. I just wanted to get some hits.
GameBuoy.org/hiddennudes.htm.
Okay, now you're going to have to make a page there that directs them to episodes.
Obviously.
All right, with that having been said, it's time for some shout-outs. As ever and always, the first podcast I would direct you to is the Koopa Club video game podcast. That is Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. They're sort of our sister show, and if you like what we do, you will almost certainly like what they do. I could say that just as easily about VG Realness, whom I name-dropped like 3 times this week, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. VG Realness is superb, and if you're listening to us, again, it's very likely you're going to get something out of listening to them. I also want to shout out to Geek Charisma, a podcast that is everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics. They recently started uploading content to their various feeds again, so that's very exciting. You know who else recently started updating their feeds? Is Neshoba Talks With You About Games. He does sort of a NPR meets Broadway thing that looks at sort of larger community and culture issues in gaming, and I really, really, really dig what he does over there. Of course, next up comes Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I personally stole ever so many of my cues. We wouldn't exist if not for Orange Lounge Radio, and you could say the same thing about the folks behind the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore.
Geekery, ooh.
Right? Shirtless men in frats.
Hey.
And last, but certainly not least, is the Retrograde podcast. They take a look in each episode at some older games that are really deserving of your attention. I love what they do, and I'm a big fan. You should check it out. Slackkick, how about you?
You always have to transition now at this point.
I want to take you to a game bar!
I'd like to shout out to Game Bar, part of our Hunty Bunch, which is the podcast that fills
That's
your brain space.
The way we became the Hunty Bunch.
I just want to point out that Captain Spike was slapping his titties. Sorry.
I'm a dude. They're called pecs, bro.
Okay, you tell yourself that. Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They're basically the gay video game prairie home companion. Nerdgasm Network is the wildest shock jock video game radio show you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, that's vognetwork.com, you can find Horde House, which is a place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously, and Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. I'd like to give a special shout-out to Horde House, who shouted out my Twitch stream, so thanks for mentioning that.
Aww.
Yeah, Exifer had tuned in for a little bit before he was on Horde House.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, last, but certainly not least, are two great gems in the podcasting arena. There's Video Game Outsiders, which is a podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective, and the Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G, which is pop culture rants, ramblings, and reviews from a gay nerd perspective. As ever and always, our wonderful theme music was done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated. With that, thank you for tuning in. We always appreciate your loyalty and your fealty. And you're listening, and just for being there, we're at episode 46. I'm so happy y'all stuck with us for so long.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to us today. We really appreciate you taking your time to listen to our little show. We'll be back with you again shortly. We have some interesting things to talk about in the next few weeks. We hope you'll stick with us and tune in. But until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy.
Oh, taking it old school.
Well, you know, I figured since there was a lot of stagnation on this episode, Last of Us, that I should probably, you know.
So, Heath Annual Dice Awards. Are we going to start out with Last of Us? It's going to be like, really?
Yeah.
All up on Naughty Dog's dick, Naughty Dog's Red Rocket.
Ah! I'm including that as an outtake.
It's gross. I don't want to be talking about dog dick.
There are people on the internet that really need this information, Mom.
I need your credit card so I can buy some DualShock first, so I can try and get this fucking light bar off of it.
Thomas, language!
Oh, I can't wait to see what they point out this year. It must be some real great games.
Captain Spike, do you want to open the envelope?
All right.
Dude, that's your W-2. You just ripped it in half.
Outstanding achievements in game direction. Okay.
You can't edit out that silence. That is my reaction.
Yeah.
That is my reaction.
That is why I was making my chair squeak.
A few Twitter tweets.
Tell me about your tweets.